Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for May the 28th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Tonight we have as our special guest Mr. Jerry Kerr, president of an organization called Disability Rights Advocates for Technology, and also the president of a group called SAGS for Vets, a charity which donates Segway mobility devices to disabled veterans. We also have a special segment on our show to commemorate Memorial Day, which, as you know, is today. But first, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everyone. Hope everyone is doing well, and I hope everybody had a good Memorial Day. I'm not sure what David, you did, but I went out to Ocala today. They had the Traveling Vietnam Wall Memorial in Ocala since Thursday, and that's the first time I had seen it. And what an amazing thing. It's about 1/20th of the Vietnam War wall in D.C., but it's got all the names on it. They had it at the Veterans Park in Ocala, Florida. They had a UE there today doing all sorts of little flybys and everything. That was kind of neat. So that was kind of fun. It was a great experience. But as far as tonight goes, I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show, so you can let us know what is on your mind as far as veteran issues. Our toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. This is the Veterans News Hour, so if you have something on your mind, veterans, call it, share it. Let us know how you're feeling. Let us know what's going on in your life, how you're dealing with the VA. Any complications, we're here to talk about it. Our first segment of the show tonight, we have an interview with Mr. Jerry Kerr, a disability rights advocate and a big supporter of disabled veterans. Due to Mr. Kerr's busy schedule, we pre-recorded the interview last Friday, May 25th. So without any further delay, Doug, if you would please roll the tape.
It's my privilege to introduce our special guest today on the Veterans News Hour. Mr. Jerry Kerr is the founder of an organization called Disability Rights Advocates for Technology, or DRAFT, an all-volunteer organization certified as one of America's best charities representing people with disabilities. On July 25, 1998, Jerry Kerr's life was suddenly transformed from a physically active CEO of a national home building and real estate development corporation, avid outdoorsman and pilot, to that of a spastic quadriplegic. He was involved in a diving accident, shattering his C4 vertebrae. The prognosis was that he would never again move from the neck down. Determined to maximize his potential for recovery, Mr. Kerr embarked upon a rigorous physical therapy schedule 6 days a week. Although neurologically impaired from the neck down, he regained the ability to stand briefly. In early 2003, he began using a Segway as his primary means of mobility. For those of you who may not be familiar, a Segway is a two-wheel, self-balancing electric mode of transportation. In September 2005, Jerry Kerr and his organization, Disability Rights Advocates for Technology, started the SAGS for Vets program, awarding Segways to men and women of the United States military who had sustained severe injuries while serving our nation in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, injuries which resulted in permanent disability and difficulty walking. In the years since, SAGS for Vets has received widespread recognition, including the 2010 Spirit of Hope Award by the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And in 2008, Jerry Kerr was personally awarded the Secretary of the Army's Public Service Award for Distinguished Public Service in providing outstanding support to our nation's veterans. In 2016, the Congressional Medal of Honor Society awarded Mr. Kerr with the Distinguished Citizen Award. We are very pleased to have him on the Veterans News Hour to tell us more about his work. So let me welcome Mr. Jerry Kerr to our show today. How are you, sir?
I'm great, David. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, it's our privilege. Let me begin by asking you to tell us about the various kinds of mobility devices which your organization provides to veterans, and what kind of feedback are you getting from veterans who are using them?
We focus on the Segway and a device called the AlleyChair Adapted Segway, which is a device that is only available from Segs for Vets or through Segs for Vets, one that we actually manufacture. The Segway is a universally designed mobility device that allows someone to operate it standing, and that's unique in the world. First of all, the fact that it's universally designed means it doesn't draw attention to your disability. When you're standing on it, your disability all but disappears, for the most part, for many of us that are using it. And the AlleyChair Adapted Segway is something that we created to try to serve those men and women who had sustained injuries which left them unable to stand, those with such high-level traumatic amputations that they could never make productive use of prosthetics, or those with spinal cord injuries that left them unable to stand, and a whole host of other things that might be involved that doesn't allow them to stand. The impact of these devices physiologically is tremendous for those people that are receiving them. But one cannot underestimate and cannot overestimate the impact of the psychological benefits of these types of devices, those that are universally designed, those that are viewed by other people that we meet as, wow, that is cool. They would never say that about a wheelchair or one of the old three-wheeled scooters or things like this. I mean, when people see our recipients on these types of devices using them for mobility, it's like they get a smile on their face, the smile of not just the recipients, but also of those that are witnessing it. So the veterans that are using them, they wish it was available through the VA. They wish that it was available to more of those veterans that could make use of it, but it's a seriously positive impact, and it's an awesome thing.
Well, thank you. That's great to hear. Now, our Segway is pretty easy to use. How long does it take to learn to use one, and where is the training conducted?
We actually started back in 2006 assessment and training programs at Walter Reed, and at that time was in Washington, D.C., and now it's moved up to, obviously, up to Bethesda when we had the joint combination between Bethesda and Walter Reed. So now at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, there is an assessment and training program that is conducted there. And at Fort Sam down in San Antonio, at now the San Antonio Area Military Medical Center, at the Center for the Intrepid, we have our largest assessment and training program down there. And then we also have an assessment and training program at the Naval Medical Center out in San Diego. Back in 2006, when we began to start these programs there, those were the primary sites where our injured went for physical rehabilitation, and they spent years there sometimes. And so this was a very efficient way for us to expose this new technology and this unique opportunity that was available through our organization for our severely injured to potential recipients. As time has wound down, we have changed and evolved while we still have those assessment and training programs at those three military medical centers. Most of the training that we do today takes place at the home of the recipients. It's just been a much more efficient way of handling it these days because as the war has wound down, the number of folks receiving care at Walter Reed and at the Center for the Intrepid and at the Naval Medical Center in San Diego has diminished. And so today, most of the training and assessment is done in the home of the recipient.
I see. And how long does it take for a veteran to learn to use one of these devices?
In large measure, it depends on each individual, but most of them will learn in a few hours, say 4 hours of training and studying and assessment. Our volunteers will work with them, and in about 4 hours, most of those for most injuries and most disabilities will be up and running in a satisfactory fashion. Some with some other unique injuries may take longer. Last year had an individual who was a quadruple amputee who did not wear prosthetics, and so we had to work with the prosthetist to design cuffs and things for her to use that allowed her to operate an alley chair without prosthetics. And so sometimes it takes months, but by and large, most of the time, unless we have a very challenging situation that we have to address, we can do it in 3 or 4 hours.
I see. Now, Jerry, how does a veteran apply to receive a Segway, and what is the criteria used by your organization to approve an application?
The if they are not receiving assessment and training at Walter Reed, if they're not a patient or the Center for the Intrepid or the Naval Medical Center San Diego, they would go to our website, which is www.SEGS4VETS.NGO, which is segsforvets.ngo, and go to the application page, and they fill out their application, and contained in that application is information about their level of disability, their injuries, and other items which we find relevant to making a decision. Once they submit that application is assessed by a committee. They go through an initial assessment. At that time, we determine whether we think the application has a reasonable chance of being awarded, or if it doesn't, then they'll get a declination letter. And if they receive a declination in a letter, they can always submit additional information. Sometimes people don't submit very much information at all, not enough information. We can even make a decision about. And so they would, in all probability at that time, receive a declination letter and inviting them, if they would like, if they don't agree with it, to submit additional information. But once we determine that an application has a chance of being awarded, it then goes through a vetting process to determine if we think that they can use a Segway successfully, what they want to do with it, whether they will use a Segway. That includes a personal interview. And then ultimately, once we go through all of that process, we score each application based upon their level of disability, based upon what they're doing in life, if they're going to use it to go back to school or if they're going to use it to continue or acquire employment. Our focus in life is for all veterans, particularly disabled veterans, to find purpose in their life. And through the use of this mobility tool, they can solve a lot of issues and overcome challenges that will allow them to live a purpose-filled life, a joyful life. We just want to make sure they want to do that. And so that's part of the process. It's a rather long process. Part of the reason it's such a long process is because we only have so much money. We're a small, all-volunteer organization. We raise about $3 million a year, a third of which comes from our volunteers, our board members, our advisory board members, which kind of speaks to their commitment about the program. They've been doing this now for almost 14 years, and so we never have enough money. We don't focus on raising money. We focus on really operating this program and making sure we do the best for as many of those people as we possibly can.
I see. Jerry, I understand that you've testified before Congress on disability issues. Can you tell us about that?
I have, and as a person with a disability, it is important for all of us to know that while there are laws and regulations that protect the rights of our men and women, our disabled veterans, and all people with disabilities as they come back to the United States, but if we don't make sure, if we don't take care of that, if we don't take care of the interpretations, if we don't weigh in on those issues, then they could be lost forever. And in our case, and in my case in particular, our focus is on universal design. We do not believe that we can offer our aging baby boomer population and our disabled veterans the probability of a higher quality of life, a sustainable, independent life, a longer independent life through the use of medical solutions. We feel that only through the use of universally designed venues and in particular universally designed technology devices can society afford to take care of this ever-growing population of people that have needs that won't otherwise be taken care of. So by focusing on universal design, designing the world in a manner which it's usable for all people, whether you're 5 years old or 75 years old, whether you're someone who is an amputee and lost one of your legs or a track star, if we design the world in a manner which is usable by all people, then society will be better able to offer longer independent lives and it won't be as much of a burden for society, and it will provide people with disabilities in our aging population a much more enjoyable, higher quality of life.
Wow, that's an awesome vision, Jerry. What are your future goals for your organization, Disability Rights Advocates for Technology, and also for the SEGS for Vets program?
You know, as for an organization, we're such a unique organization our future is something that is always a little bit in doubt from the prospects of we don't have large staffs, but we are driven by a passion to change the world in a way that is really common sense. But we continue to advocate for universal design. We continue to try to reach out to people in government, public policy people, about the need to provide veterans, disabled veterans, with the tools that they need. The impact of devices like the Segway or the Alley Chair Adapted Segway, which is available to no one except through our organization, what a benefit that would be to the VA to offer it. What a long-term benefit it would be to all of those disabled folks out there if we approached solutions or problems with an open mind and trying to find the best solution. And so the answer for our organization is we're going to continue to be advocates for it in the best way we can, which is coming on shows like this, reaching out to people that will listen to us. It's a busy world out there, and there's a lot of people talking. There's a lot of information flying around. But at the end of the day, when you have people with disabilities that are there trying to serve those who have served us who now have disabilities, it really speaks to the mindset.
Right. Well, I applaud all your work, Jerry. How can our listeners learn more about the Disability Rights Advocates for Technology organization and also the SEGS for Vets program? And also, how can they make a contribution to help?
You know, they can go to segsforvets.ngo, the website. They can Google Segs for Vets, S-E-G-S, numeral 4, V-E-T-S. They can go, there's links there to the draft website, but it is simply www.draft.ngo. And by the way, for your listeners, NGO stands for non-governmental organization. It just requires a little higher authentication than just saying .org. It takes a you have to submit documentation and things to make sure NGO is really who they say they are. But go to either of those websites. There's contact us pages. There's places you can ask questions. But there's also a lot of information on there. And you can go to Facebook, our pages on that. But I highly recommend going to the website. And there is the opportunity, should you want to support us and support this mission, to make a contribution.
Well, I certainly hope our listeners will, Jerry. And I would like to thank you very much for being on the Veterans News Hour today. I'd like to thank you for all the great work that you and members of your organization are doing to help veterans. And we certainly wish you continued success in the future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jerry. Well, I'd like to, again, thank Jerry Kerr for taking the time to record that interview last Friday. Since 2005, his charity has awarded almost 2,000 of the universally designed mobility devices, Segways, and Alley Chairs, the adapted Segway chair. And the group continues to provide support services to more than 400 veterans and their families on an annual basis. Listeners can find out more and can also donate by going to the website segs4vets.org or the website segs4vets.ngo. That's the organization is SEGS4VETS, and that stands for Segways, which are the universal mobility devices that Jerry described. The organization is based in St. Louis. Their toll-free number, if you want to grab a pen and paper, I encourage you to contact them if you think you can support them or are interested, or if you know someone that could use their services. The organization's toll-free number is 1-800-401-7940. Let me give it to you again. It's 1-800-401-7940. As Jerry Kerr mentioned in his interview, Segs for Vets is a nonprofit charity that relies on the generosity of supporters to achieve its goals of helping disabled veterans. It does so through direct contributions as well as fundraising. Now, speaking of fundraising, if you live in the St. Louis, Missouri area or plan on being in St. Louis in mid-October of this year, 2018, and if you enjoy golf or would like to support golf, you should participate in the third annual Segs for Vets Golf and Fireside Chat at the Persimmon Woods Golf Club in St. Louis. Mark your calendar if you're going to be in St. Louis. It's Monday, October the 15th, 2018. That's the third annual Segs for Vets Golf and Fireside Chat, Persimmon Woods Golf Club in St. Louis, October 15th, 2018. That's a Monday. Now, according to a press release from the organization, quote, this tournament is unlike any other you have experienced before. Preceding the tournament, Segways and Alley Chair Adapted Segways will be presented to some new recipients. The tournament format is a four-person scramble consisting of 18 teams. Immediately following the tournament will be hors d'oeuvres, a live auction, and the most unique fireside chat you will ever experience. Come listen as Mike Kelly, who's the voice of the University of Missouri Tigers sports program, conducts an interview with past Segway recipients and special guests who will be announced shortly. We hope you don't miss this event. 100% of the proceeds raised from this golf tournament go directly to the Segs for Vets program. For more information, call the group. Again, their toll-free number is 1-800-401-7940. That's 1-800-401-7940. I wish them the greatest success. It's a great organization, And I see part of the mission of the Veterans News Hour is to help these organizations do the good work that they're doing. Richard, I know you're a golf fanatic yourself and a big advocate of the use of golf fundraising for various veteran organizations. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Raising money through golf outings has been something that I've done for a very long time. It can be very successful. Obviously, this group has been successful for starting into the third year. I heard they received $3 million this past year. That's a pretty good number. I'm curious to find out how much of that comes from that golf tournament. But, that was a terrific interview. And, David, thank you very much for bringing Jerry and Save for Vets to everyone's attention. It just shows you how creative you can be in terms of helping vets. And, over the last year and a half that we've been on the air, we've put many groups on. And I'm just always amazed to see, just how creative different organizations are in terms of getting money out to veterans with the different health issues, disability issues. When you first told me about this Save for Vets, I was really amazed. What a great idea. And so I wish them the best of luck. And I'm sure they're going to have a great golf tournament. I looked at Persimmon Woods as a good golf course. So if anyone's out there and not only do you want to help Save for Vets, but you're also interested in playing a good golf course, you should really look into going out there on October the 15th, because Persimmon Woods is a good golf course. So get out there and go play some golf and have a fun day and donate your time and your money. Our second segment of the show tonight is dedicated to the memory of all the men and women who have lost their life in the service to our country in the military. Memorial Day, which is observed on the last Monday of May, commemorates the men and women who died while in the military service. In observance of the holiday, many people visit cemeteries and memorials, and volunteers often place American flags on each gravesite at national cemeteries. In case you are wondering about the history of Memorial Day, it dates back to 3 years of the Civil War ended. On May 5th, 1868, the head of an organization of Union veterans, the Grand Army of the Republic, GAR, established Decoration Day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the war dead with flowers. Major General John A. Logan declared that Decoration Day should be observed on May the 30th. It is believed that date was chosen because flowers would be in bloom all over the country. The first large observance was held that year at Arlington National Cemetery across the Potomac from Washington, D.C. It was not until after World War I, however, that the day was expanded to honor those who have died in all American wars. Many years later, in 1971, Memorial Day was declared a national holiday by an act of Congress, though it is still often called Decoration Day. It was then also placed on the last Monday in May. To further ensure the sacrifices of American fallen heroes were never forgotten, in December 2000, the U.S. Congress passed and the President signed into law the National Moment of Remembrance Act, creating the White House Commission on the National Moment of Remembrance. The Commission's charter is to encourage the people of the United States to give something back to their country, which provides them so much freedom and opportunity by encouraging and coordinating commemorations in the United States of Memorial Day and the National Moment of Remembrance. The National Moment of Remembrance encourages all Americans to pause wherever they are at 3 p.m. local time on Memorial Day for a minute of silence to remember and honor those who have died in service to the nation. So in that spirit, tonight in Veterans News Hour, we would like to pay tribute to those who lost their life in the service of our nation. Let us remember the fallen as well as their surviving families. David?
Thank you, Richard. The Navy Gold Star Program provides long-term support to surviving families of fallen sailors who died on active duty. This Memorial Day, we recognize the families of those who paid the ultimate sacrifice in the service of the country. In this next segment of the show, you will hear from a group of Gold Star family members honor the memories of their loved ones. You will hear from Lisa Emmanuel Ruiz, whose 21-year-old son, Petty Officer 3rd Class Manuel Ruiz, died in 2007 when the helicopter he was in was shot down over Iraq. You will also hear from Diane McDaniels, whose 19-year-old son, James McDaniel, was killed on October 12, 2000, in the terrorist bombing of the Navy ship USS Cole. And you will also hear from Amy Looney, whose 29-year-old husband, Navy SEAL Lieutenant Brendan Looney, was killed in Afghanistan in 2010. So, Doug, if you'll please roll the second tape tonight.
It's a family nobody wants to be a member of. But we are. Enjoyed sports. Normal boy stuff. But he's always making people laugh. Very good sense of humor.
He was 18 when he joined. They had a recruiter at his school. And he came home and he said, "Mom, I want to join the Navy." And I was hesitant about that. And so I went and talked to the recruiter. And I remember telling him, "Make sure you take care of my son." And he said, "We will."
When Brendan told me he wanted to be a SEAL, I was happy for him because I knew it was something that he wanted to do and I wanted to be supportive. But at the same time, I was scared.
I think he wanted to be where the action is and out in the field and helping others.
Yeah, I think so. He loved to help people, and that's what he did.
He was excited. I mean, as soon as he received his trident, he was ready to go and deploy. I was ready for him to go because I felt that the sooner he got over there, the sooner he was going to be able to get back to me.
It was, well, it really was hard on us because we went there, we took him to the ship and watched the cell off and saw a tear fall from his eye.
He deployed on March 9th, which is my birthday, in 2010. But I'll never forget those few moments before we left that day. And, we always had this thing where we never wanted to say goodbye to each other because that seemed very permanent and very final. We would always say, "See you later."
Damaged in a terrorist attack in Yemen.
American sailors were killed.
I went into work. I walked in and I looked at the television because it was on. It was saying breaking news, attack on the USS Cole. And so I went downstairs and I see two men come getting out of the car. Both of them had the uniforms. And I know from TV that when they come to your house, they're not coming to tell you good news. And that's when they told me, Ms. McDaniels, he said, "I have to tell you that your son is dead." So that's how we found out. It's October 12th in the evening. Yeah, he had died.
So this would have been their 59th combat mission on that deployment to Afghanistan. And they had a really successful deployment. They were ready to pass off to another SEAL team that came in. And on that mission, he lost his life there in Afghanistan in that helicopter.
They were in a CH-46 and it was shot down. And all seven perished.
I mean, it's very bittersweet because, of course, I would much prefer Brendan to be here today and every day going forward, but it also makes me very proud because I don't know many people out there that would be willing. I don't even know if I would be willing to go out there and put my life on the line.
It's tough, because you got your son buried out there, and then you see many others buried up there, when it's so many, and it's sad.
When we buried Manuel there, he was the last row, and then 10 years later now, there's like 15 more rows of graves that people have served and lost their lives.
I couldn't ask for a better son. He was really a good son. I can't think of anything bad I can say about him because there wasn't any.
We're proud of him and everything he did. He saved a lot of lives while he was here.
My perspective in life has really changed, and I value and appreciate people, and I appreciate the chance to just be able to experience life. And even though it's a different version of life, it's still something that I'm thankful for. And I know I had that chance because men like Brendan and men and women that serve in the military selflessly put their lives on the line each and every day so that I'm able to do that.
I'm glad he did what he did as far as serving, because that's what he wanted to do. Because I wouldn't want anyone else to go through what I went through and the other family members went through. Because we went through a lot.
I don't want anybody to understand it, because I think in order for you to truly understand it, you have to experience it yourself. So I want them to just see Gold Star family members as strong and resilient and wanting nothing more but then to carry on their loved one's legacy. We don't want them to be forgotten. We want them to stay alive in our memory and in the memory of generations well beyond our years.
Well, I think the memories and the insight shared by those three Gold Star families is really fitting for us to hear today on Memorial Day. Let us always remember the sacrifices of those who gave their lives in the service of our country. I think it is important that we remember that Memorial Day is for that reason. Many people tend to associate it with a day off from work or beginning of summer or barbecues or those sort of things. But we always need to keep in mind that the purpose is to remember people that gave their lives. You know, many people in the military will say and they will acknowledge that when they joined the military, they were essentially promising the government that they will follow what the government tells them to do in the service of the country, up to and including giving up their lives in the service of their country. And, you know, I read a book once from a Vietnam veteran, whose name slips my mind at the moment, but his point was that, you know, people don't give their lives, they have their lives violently taken from them in war. And, you know, behind every one of the stories that you were hearing from the Gold Star family, there's tragic loss of a service member and the long-term impact on family and friends. Personally, I think there's no more fitting memory to help promote their legacy. It would be to remember their sacrifice, but also to dedicate ourselves to the work of reducing the chance of future wars. That may be a bit idealistic, but it's still very important, because what greater tribute can we really offer those of us that have served in the military, those that haven't served in the military but that are dedicated to peace? I think how quickly the world can change. I think of two examples. I think back to August the 1st of 1990. You may wonder, what was August the 1st of 1990? Well, it was the day before Iraq invaded Kuwait. And you know the dominoes that fell after that, leading to war. And then the other date is September the 10th, 2001, the day before September 11th and the terrorist attacks of September 11th. there were people serving in the military on those days, and in the days and months before those two dates, that were serving on August 1st of 1990, who ended up losing their lives and had no idea that within a year, many of them would lose their lives in Operation Desert Shield, Operation Desert Storm. But what a difference a day can make when you're in the military. Those in the military know this. Those of you that may be listening who have not served in the military may not fully appreciate the fact that when you're in the military, it's not like a civilian job where if you are unhappy with it, you can generally just leave. In the military, you've signed up, and you're under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which criminalizes walking off the job, going AWOL or deserting. And not only that, but you have to follow orders, and that can be, you know, it puts you at the call of your country to go anywhere in the world on relatively short notice. And that's all part of what we need to be remembering about Memorial Day, the sacrifices of those who gave their lives in war, but also who gave their lives in the military during peacetime. I personally have known several service members who died in accidents preparing for their wartime mission, particularly in aircraft crashes. I was in the Air Force, and they certainly gave their lives. It may not have been in combat, but they were preparing for combat, and they have to prepare the way they're going to have to fight, and it's dangerous work. I think it's important that we dedicate ourselves to the work of reducing the chance of future wars, however we can do that. Richard, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm listening to you talk, and thank you very much, David. You know, you serving, and by the way, thank you for your service. We said this before on the show, but David Corey, my law partner, I'm honored to have him as my partner here. He is a retired lieutenant colonel from the Air Force, having served 12 years and then 8 years of reserve. So, again, thanks for your service, David. I think I said this on one of our recent shows about a month or so ago. I was up in North Carolina visiting my daughter and son-in-law, who's stationed at Seymour Johnson, and he's a pilot, flies F-15s, and now he's a trainer. On one of the nights that I was there, we had a big buffet with the entire squadron. And all the pilots were in their uniforms, you know, their flying uniforms, their jumpsuits, I guess that's what they are. And, you know, not having served in the service, I was struck by just watching these men, and there were a couple of women, and then their wives and husband in the room as well, and the laughter. But then there was also this sense that they weren't being deployed anywhere, but you can feel that there is a sense that in any given moment something could happen to men and women who are pilots. And that night, a group of them were going out on a war game run out into the Atlantic. And one plane plays enemy, and they fly around, and you know, they're traveling at such high rates of speed. And as this one pilot said to me, something's wrong up there, and they don't really talk about it much. And he said to me, because I don't talk about it in my staff, so I don't want to get really worried. But stuff happens up there, and I have to react. And it goes to what you were saying there. These are war games. They're training and getting ready for the day they have to go out and actually be in battle. So they have to, you know, constantly train, just like anybody who trains for anything. Got to prepare. And, you know, I just sat back and I was thinking, you know, God forbid something happened to one of these guys or gals. But it could, you know, that's the reality. It could happen. So, you know, my prayers and my respect go out to all these men and women who are active and serving. You know, we have a client who's deceased now, and he was a pilot for, was a crew member of the B-52 in Vietnam, Colonel Pete Bomani from Hernando, Florida. And he was telling me how before they went out on their mission, and I think Peter, I think he flew over about 187 missions in Vietnam, the number. But they would always play, have a big card game before they would go out. And he said to me that they would look around the room, and they knew that someone wasn't coming back. They didn't know who wasn't coming back, but they knew statistically someone's not going to come back from the next mission. And they would sit, in the hangar and play cards right before they go off on this mission. So, I can't even imagine going through that and having to live in that environment. And as you said, David, you can't walk off. You can't say, I'm not going to play today. Can't take your ball and go home. Can't tell your employer that you don't feel like doing that particular job today. You have to go out and do your job by hook or by crook, whether you like it or not. And so many times that puts your own life in peril. So today is a great day to remember all those men and women who put their life in peril and gave their life to this country. Because that's what they do. And, it's an amazing gift that one can do for their country. I also want to thank people like Rebecca Winkler from the Panhandle of Florida and her PTSD program that they have for families. Camp Hope out there in Houston, Texas, which is a salvation for men right now, hopefully women, are suffering from PTSD and all the people that they take in. And as you said, David, the cost of war program that's out there. I mean, there's so much going on. And maybe someday we can remember Memorial Day as something for all those people who sacrificed, but we don't have to have sacrifices in the future.
Yeah, well said, Richard, and I hope our listeners will share their thoughts with us tonight. We just have a few minutes left. If anyone would like to call in, please feel free to do so. Our toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. Richard, I know we've talked about various projects that are still in early stages for us, but one is to support the creation of a documentary on the full cost of war. Last year we had a couple professors from Brown University's Cost of War Project who focused on the cost of war, specifically Iraq and Afghanistan wars, and looking at it, the cost of American lives, but going far beyond that, and the cost of human life of everyone affected by those wars, and then also the other layers of the cost of war, and literally the financial cost of war and the consequences of that on our society, because the dollars spent on those wars are dollars that can't be spent on other things here domestically at home. But also the other costs and effects of war on a society. Those have not been fully explored, much as they could be, particularly for the most recent wars. Ken Burns, last September released a documentary on Vietnam. Well, Vietnam, the height of Vietnam was 50 years ago, and they're still, looking for more insights and analyzing that war. Do we need to be doing that 50 years from now for Iraq and Afghanistan? Let's hope not. Let's not wait that long to really dissect and study and apply the lessons, not just enough to have the knowledge. Knowledge, you have all the knowledge in the world, and if you don't apply it, it's basically pointless or useless. So if we have any listeners out there that are interested in supporting an effort to promote a full series documentary on the cost of war, please contact Richard Hurley or myself. We certainly would welcome your support. It's a nonprofit effort to make sure that there is a fully in-depth discussion. Target audience would be not just the American public, but worldwide audience, and certainly an audience of those that that make decisions in government about going to war. And they need to fully appreciate the consequences at every level and layer on that. Now, I know we're rapidly drawing to a close, so I hope this has been a useful, productive evening for everyone. But, Rick, why don't you tell us about the Coaching Into Care program as we discuss every week?
Yes, David, thank you very much. And, yes, before we do close tonight, we would like to provide a weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching Into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call. The number is toll-free, 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458, and its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We would like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. We will close the show tonight, Memorial Day, in remembrance of all those lost in war and those who also died in peacetime serving in the military. And we'll do that with the playing of taps. So, Doug, please roll tape 3.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.